The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Haven't been on for close to a week. I think the Ladies' Night episode is the most recent one. Very entertaining if you haven't heard it. As for the news at hand, it's all bad. It is terrible. Awful, ugly. 2024 is just not good if you're a Red Sox fan. And what that is, as most of you know, Lucas Giolito has a partial tear of his UCL. Most likely will miss all of the 2024 season and probably half of the 2025 season. So, not good. The Red Sox rotation, as far as I'm concerned, kind of looks like it's in shambles, but we will get into all of it. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Cody Paulson, Michael Storms, even though he has a girl's name on his Google Meet box. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well. You know, I was thinking to myself, and it had been a little while since I was on the pod. I was like, you know, I'd been pretty negative the last couple of shows. We were getting into spring training. You know, I was like, all right, you know, rinse, refresh. Let's, you know, put some lipstick on this. Like, we got to be positive. We got to be optimistic. And I was just like talking myself into the idea of it's a new season. You never know what could happen. I was reading the, you know, the press clippings. I was, you know, kind of drinking the Kool-Aid of we're going to surprise people. We're going to, you know, shock the world. Why not us kind of mentality. And then sure enough, you know, a swift kick into the shin. Right. But other than that, you know, I'm doing well, happy to be back. Always a pleasure to be able to do the show with you gentlemen. Micah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. But as a Red Sox fan, I'm just crying on the inside because today, I mean, I'm this is all unfolding as I'm, you know, teaching and my phone goes off and I get the alert. I'm like, Giolito, like he probably in terms of value, he's probably like the fourth or fifth most valuable player on the Red Sox. If we believe he's going to turn it around because he's supposed to be the innings guy and they lost their innings guy. So it's just a huge blow. And, you know, I think Red Sox teams in the past would probably go out and actually make a move. I don't anticipate that to be the case. If they do make a move, it's going to be minor. So just super disappointing. You know, we're 23 days until opening day and I want to be excited. I want to be pumped. And I was like you, Cody, I was just convincing myself that this team can at least make it entertaining to watch. And now I'm back in the dumps and I'm just, it's disappointing. I just don't want to go through another season where the Red Sox are, you know, playing completely meaningless games in September, but we can discuss further. But as a Red Sox fan, today was about as, these are the days you dread. You hate information like this popping up on your phone and an important player just going down for a very long time. You hate it.
We'll be lucky to be playing meaningful games in May at this rate. But my first thing, see, I was at work also. I have a little bit more freedom. I can check my phone here and there. I saw Nick's comment before I actually pulled up the war room, but I could see his comment saying, now it's really important that we sign Jordan Montgomery. So I'm like, well, what just happened? Who just signed? What trade just happened? And then I pull it up. Giolito has a torn UCL. So that was it was pretty awful. It was a very awful 2.7 seconds, you know, between seeing the thing and then pulling it up. And yeah. But anyway, Cody, go ahead. Open it up.
Yeah, I mean, Mike had touched on it a little bit, right? Like, this guy was supposed to be Mr. Innings, you know. In interviews prior to the spring training, he was always talking about, you know, his goals weren't necessarily ERA or Cy Youngs or, you know, strikeouts or whatever it was. He wanted to be the innings guy. He wanted to get over 200 innings. And, you know, he was really excited to kind of get, you know, a new start, for lack of better terms, you know, a reset, a refresh. Take one of those pillow contracts and kind of get back on the bump, get back into his mojo, and, you know, maybe sign something later on down the road. And, you know, when you look at baseball injuries, there's really only one part of the body that will take you out for the season, right? It really is that elbow. Now, I know Acuna had the ACL, but those are pretty, you know, uncommon in baseball. You don't really very often get season-ending potential injuries unless it is that UCL Tommy John. And, you know, fresh off of talking about being an optimist, you know, they did say it was the partial tear, right? I think it was Tanaka that pitched with the partial tear for the Yankees. I don't think he ever got Tommy John. And I think, you know, Ohtani did it for a little bit, if I'm not mistaken, albeit, you know, that might not have been advised. And I think he eventually went under the knife. But we haven't gotten the official diagnosis. We haven't gotten, you know, the official proclamation that says, hey, this, you know, it's curtains for 2024. We'll see him All-Star break 2025 or, you know, whatever it ends up being. But it really is a bummer, right? Because this was one of the few moves that we did make in the offseason, right? You know, we really picked our spots. And, you know, where we didn't make a bevy of moves, the moves that we did make, I think, were – I guess heavy value just because there were so few of them. And, you know, it's a real bummer to have the win kind of get taken out of the sails in that regard. And, you know, everybody's saying, oh, this is the time to go out and sign Montgomery. This is the perfect time to go out and sign Montgomery. And I see it the other way, unfortunately, right? Like, if Henry and Fenway Sports Group wasn't willing to invest in this team, didn't think that this team was going to win in 2024, even though they tell us this is all about championships and we want to build a championship level roster, why would you invest money in the team now when you're another player removed from being close, right? You know, Montgomery would have been a great addition, a great, you know, cherry on top of the cake kind of thing. And it's like, okay, now we got to add another layer to the cake. And, you know, I would be very surprised if we went on signed Montgomery. And, you know, we hear the Cooper Criswell talks about, you know, he might be an intriguing rotation option, or, you know, where we're really happy with, you know, the way that our starters look. We might go to a six-man rotation. Houck is stronger than he's ever been. Cutter Crawford's added miles to his fastball, yada, yada. So, you know, I think while it makes too much sense for the Red Sox to sign Montgomery, I don't think this Giolito move, injury, really pushes us any closer to signing Montgomery. You know, I'd be thrilled if we did, but I'm not holding my breath.
You know, the injury really, I think, sheds light on what was going on with Giolito, because last year, specifically in the second half, his velocity just was way down on all of his pitches. And I think, you know, there was a lot of question, like, is something's going on? Or, you know, they had basically said it was mechanical. But now that we find out he has a slight tear in his UCL, you know, that kind of tracks, you know. And, you know, the Red Sox said that they had found something in his mechanics and that they could try to build him back up and with the velocity. And it's not surprising that once they tried to make those changes, maybe incorporate some type of, you know, long toss program or something like that, just to get the velocity back, then the elbow goes, because velocity is the number one cause for elbow injuries. So, you know, his velocity was up in his, I think, his two spring training starts. I think he was at like 94, 95. So it's a really big bummer that, you know, he was showing what the Red Sox were hoping he would be able to do and get that velocity back up. And then boom, he doesn't feel well after his second start. So it's a killer. You know, they had said, and now this is what they said, the reporters of the Red Sox, that Henry didn't believe that they didn't, they needed to make another move because he thought they had a winning roster already. Now, I don't buy that for 1 second, but that was the report, that there was no reason to add to the roster because they already had a competitive roster. But if that was the belief and you lose Giolito, I wonder, do they still believe that they really have a winning roster? Because I just don't see it. I don't see how anybody can make that case. Cooper Criswell, I mean, the fact that that was the name mentioned in the press conference today from Breslow, I mean, what is he going to say if he has no flexibility with adding to the payroll? I guess he has no choice but to say Cooper Criswell. But, I mean, you're counting on a guy who has thrown 36 innings over the last 36 big league innings over the last 2 years. Is that who we're really going to talk about? You know, I mean, that's the type of name that we have heard over the last two seasons that were just, you know, claimed from another roster and put into the bullpen or even the rotation. And it's like, where did they find this guy? And that's who Cooper Criswell is. And if that is going to be the guy they count on from beginning of the season, May on, like, Carrabas had a great tweet, like, we're going to see another 65 starts from TBD, because that is what this season is looking like unless they add another arm. And, you know, again, 23 days to the season. It just puts so much stress on the rest of the pitching staff.
So you can't blame the Red Sox for the fact he's going to need Tommy John. He had a great record of durability. He previously had Tommy John. I thought it was 2014. I guess it was 2012. So he is, you know, for guys that have had two, I guess he was in that neighborhood if he was going to need one. But still, for 2 years, you're not going to be concerned with that. That's not the Red Sox fault. However, Giolito was a high-risk signing in terms of a performance standpoint. There were no assurances he was going to return to form and be the number one or even the number two or three that we needed him to be. It was a high-risk signing, and it was really stupid of them to put all of their eggs in his basket and then just trot out all the rinse and repeat guys that we're about to sit through again. So that's really frustrating. Another frustrating way to look at it is this season, we are going to pay Giolito and Chris Sale a combined $37 million to not help us. That's a lot of money. That's almost 20% of your payroll to those two players. You can't... If we were going to be bad, and I still think we were going to be, if there were going to be no more moves to the rotation, you can't even trade Giolito now in July, which I'm sure was probably a backup plan. Like, okay, let's fix him and then we'll flip him. And that's not going to happen. We're not going to get any value out of this signing at all. This is the same exact thing as the James Paxton thing almost, where the first season was a wash, had a player option for year two. In Giolito's case, it's $19 million. In Paxton's case, it was only four. So it's the same old story. We're going to wait a really long time to get a guy back halfway through the season. It's frustrating. And here are your three bona fide starting pitchers. Brian Baio, Nick Pivetta is your number two now. As it stands right now, Nick Pivetta is your number two starting pitcher. And then Cutter Crawford. Now, none of those three have really established themselves as starters. I'm okay with Bayo. I'm not where I guess if anything, if I got any questions about Bayo, it's probably health. I mean, he's had some, you know, relatively minor injuries, but he'll have Tommy John at some point in his career. And then after that, you've got musical chairs. Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock, Josh Winkowski, Cooper Criswell. This is 2020 is what this is. This is a 2020 looking rotation. Here's the bad news. In 2020, you still had Nathan Eovaldi and Martin Perez, who I would feel good about for the 2 month season that was going to happen. Now you got to figure it out with these guys for 6 months. This is bad. This is a bad situation. It's self-inflicted. And I don't, it's frustrating. Go ahead, Micah.
So based on last year, how many innings do you think the 30 starting rotations averaged? How many innings pitched?
5 2/3.
No, no, I'm okay. Poor question. So in terms of like the entire year among the entire staff, how many innings do you think?
I'm still not clear on it.
It's got to be somewhere in like the 700 to 800 innings.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. You're right in there. So it was 794 innings. Okay. And if we want to joke, because this is going to be a joke, what do you think the playoff rotations averaged?
Averaged in the playoffs or the teams that went to the playoffs?
The teams that went for the playoffs, how many innings did their rotations average over the course of the regular season?
That's got to be closer to 900 or 1,000, right?
What do you think, Terry?
I'm just like, that's just way, I'm not equipped for this.
So it's the playoff rotations averaged 859 innings. Okay. Now, between Bayo, Pivetta, Crawford, Houck, and Whitlock, those are like the five. I'm not counting Cooper Criswell because that's a joke. But those five pitchers, how many innings did they throw last year? Now you can guess this one.
I can probably get kind of close here. Pivetta probably about, let's see, 160. Bayo probably similar. So you're at 320. Crawford was probably, I don't know, add another 130 to that. So you're at 450. And I'll give the rest of them probably 80 combined. So I don't know, 530.
Your math isn't terribly off. What do you think, Cody? Do you have a number?
I was going to say probably. So are we counting just innings as a starter?
Just innings from those five arms.
Whitlock, Bayo, Pivetta, Crawford, Houck. I mean, I like that math, Terry. I'm going to say 600 just because there are some bullpen innings in there.
Those five pitchers threw 605 innings last year.
Okay.
So the average starting rotation threw 794 innings. So the gap from just a regular rotation to where those five pitchers were is astronomical. And then if we are just, you know, having fun, the playoff rotations are, you know, just way beyond that. And it's like, we're just talking getting through the season. How do they get through the season if they don't add an arm? Because I don't see how they do it. I mean, you said, Terry, like Bayo, there are concerns. I mean, last year was his first full season throwing over 150 innings. He threw 157. Nick Pivetta threw 142 innings, but how many of those were out of the bullpen? They weren't even in a traditional start, you know, like a traditional starting pitcher. Cutter Crawford, 130 innings, and he kind of wore down as the end of the year. They said he was fatigued.
His velocity fell off big time.
Yeah,
in September. Yeah.
And then Tanner Houck, 106. and they weren't necessarily quality innings, and Garrett Whitlock was at 78. So it's like, not only are the innings low, 605, the quality of the innings weren't even very good. So you're going to be relying on potentially Nick Pivetta is your opening day starter. I really hope they would give it to Bayo, but I mean, if Nick Pivetta is your opening day starter, I could easily see, you know, Pivetta taking a step back as he's thrown into more innings and not just one time through the lineup or something like that. It wouldn't surprise me if Nick Pivetta went back to a 4.5, you know, 4.85 ERA. That would not surprise me. He's your ace or your number two. I just don't know how they get through the season when those guys have thrown 605 innings. Even if you project them to throw some more innings, they're nowhere near 794 innings. We are, if they do not make an addition, we are heading back to bullpen games after bullpen games. And that was just a train wreck and so frustrating to watch. And that's where we're heading if nothing else is added to this roster.
Just super side note, I think Bayo is the opening day starter because they're not letting him pitch the Dominican Republic start because it would screw up the sequence for that.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying, I mean, Pivetta, you know, the one thing I love Pivetta is the efforts there. You know, he's not, he really wants to figure it out. And at times he does, but so if it ended up being him, I mean, it would be a great story, but Bayo is your best guy and deserves it, I would say. Getting back to Giolito here, I've speculated throughout the winter, you know, how much authority does Breslow have? And the reason why I think it's somewhat relevant here is because last summer with Bloom, they did a ton of background work on Giolito. You know, I think they toyed with the idea of possibly trading for him if they could do it. And then just a lot of, you know, a lot of collaboration on whether or not he would make sense this winter. And then Breslow signs him. So I'm wondering if there was some other influences in the front office with some of the longer tenured executives. So that's one of the things I'm wondering. And the other thing I'm wondering is, did they know of any concerns about that elbow and signed him anyway? We'll probably never know this for sure, but it's notable that during Giolito's introductory press conference, one of the key lines he said was, "It's nice to be wanted because nobody really was after me this winter. I didn't have a ton of interest." So did those other front offices know that perhaps he had an issue and 2024 might be questionable in terms of him, you know, pitching? Just wondering.
Yeah, I know you made a line to kind of the Paxton signing, and I want to push back a little bit on that, right? Because, like, we knew Giolito wasn't the same Giolito he was in Chicago, but his bill of health in years past had been highly durable, right? Paxton, we knew, never really made it through a season, had that, you know, high-end, top-of-the-rotation type stuff, but we signed him knowing he was going to miss time when we did sign him. So, you know, there are minute differences, but there is the same concept of...
I'm just talking in hindsight is all. Like, that's what it's become at this point. I didn't think that it would become that, but now that's correct. What we're looking at.
Absolutely.
So another thing here too. So the last remaining question here about how these next few weeks play out, and what's the date? I mean, we are, okay, so it's March 5th. I was thinking it could be the 8th or the 9th. That shows you how tuned out I am in some ways. But you know, we're what, 24 days away, 25 days away rather, till opening day in Seattle at 10:10 p.m. Eastern time is when that gets underway. But there's a few names left, and you guys have already said it might not make sense to go get Montgomery, and I agree with that. I kind of agree with that. It's depressing, but I don't think Montgomery, I mean, we just went through the numbers. Micah had some impressive stats ready to go about how these guys just don't log innings and quality innings at that. I don't know that adding Jordan Montgomery to these guys really gets you there. You'd have to do something really radical. You know, you'd have to bring in a Mike Clevinger guy. I'm not going to get into Bauer. That name gets kicked around a lot. But you're going to have to do something really unforeseen here to save this season. And I'm just wondering, what are the conversations in the Red Sox war room? There's no way Breslow's sitting in there saying, yeah, Cooper Criswell's the guy. He's 150 innings, at least a 4 ERA or better. There's just no way. There's no way. I just, you can't, it's impossible to sell us on this rotation. You can't do it.
Well, we were begging for Jordan Montgomery with Lucas Giolito in the rotation. You know what I mean? Like we felt we were one piece away. When we've talked all offseason, we didn't just want Lucas Giolito on the Red Sox. It was somebody else. We were really hoping for Yamamoto, but it was, you know, Sonny Gray and then Lucas Giolito. Like Giolito was never supposed to be the prized pitching addition. And now you take him out of there and you essentially traded Chris Sale. So you actually go into the regular season, if they make no moves, with less starting pitchers than they enter the offseason. And they said starting pitching was the top priority. And it's like, well, how do we go in with less than what we had at the beginning of the offseason? That just doesn't make sense. That seems like a plan that completely flopped. So I don't know what they're going to do. I tweeted out earlier, I feel like a really kind of low budget move would be Michael Lorenzen. Not a sexy move by any means, but he is known as an innings eater. And I feel like that's what they need. Like I said, 605 innings, they need somebody to throw these innings. You can't just burn your bullpen in April and, you know, Richard Fitz is going to be up here on May 1st throwing, you know, starting games. Like, it just doesn't work, you know. And my fear is that you're going to, you know, push these guys. We've already seen what Garrett Whitlock does when he has to make a start every 5 days over the course of a month or two. He breaks down. Nothing against the guy. I love Whitlock, but he has shown zero signs of durability so far as a starter. And if they decide, well, he's got to be in the rotation because they don't have anybody, does it lead to an injury to Whitlock? I don't know. You know, Josh Winkowski, if they actually make him a starter, he's going to be stretching out but trying to keep that velocity. Does that lead to an injury? Like, you're going to be pushing guys way past what they were pushed last season, and it could just have unforeseen repercussions and consequences. And I just, that's a scary thought, because then you're not only hurting 2024 potentially, but you're hurting 2025 because you're putting pitchers in there that aren't starters. I don't think Garrett Whitlock's a starter. I don't think Josh Winkowski's a starter. I'm intrigued by Houck, but he's shown the ability to throw over 100 innings before. You know, Whitlock hasn't, Winkowski hasn't. So I think they have to add somebody. I think Jordan Montgomery still makes sense. I'm still in that camp. You know, we're going to talk about the Wheeler extension, but, you know, he's one more piece off the board next year. That's an ace. And this year they're going to lose Nick Pivetta. He's going to be gone probably at the deadline. And then you're not going to pay him next year. So you're going to have to replace him next year. Like, you can't rebuild an entire rotation from free out of free agency in one off season. You're going to spend so much money and this front office doesn't want to do it. So getting Montgomery now, then you take the sale contract off the book and you go get someone next year. Like, you just make a move this year and then make another move next year and you piece your rotation together year by year rather than try to do it all at once. They're not going to be able to do it all at once next year. I don't believe it.
That's a great point. I think I've mentioned it in the war room previously. I'm not sure I have on the podcast, but yeah, you're going to next winter, regardless of the moves you made this winter, you're going to want a Jordan Montgomery type guy. So get him now. Just get him now, because I haven't looked at next year's class, at least recently, but you don't know what the market's going to be. It could be insane. And get him now. But I'm at a loss for words here. That's been my theme all winter. This isn't what I expected. I don't know where to go. I just think Breslow is a bit of a science project. He's got these constraints, so I can't, but there's no creativity here outside of the Grissom trade. There just hasn't been. I think it was the 2011 season. We were stretched thin with starters, and there was a possibility we were going to have to play game 163. That was the collapse year where Francona got fired, and we were beating Baltimore, and we could lose to Baltimore as long as the Yankees beat the Rays. If those scenarios came into play, we make the playoffs without having to play game 163. But we end up blowing the game against Baltimore, and then the Rays made up they had like a 6 or 7 run rally in the 8th or 9th inning to come out of nowhere. It was like the perfect storm. But Theo Epstein was very keenly aware of our pitching situation. We were pretty thin, and he was trying to get Bruce Chen on the roster. He wouldn't have been postseason eligible, but he might have pitched game 163 if that was needed. And I miss that creativity. I miss that outside the box thinking, and we're just not getting that. We're not getting do a three-way trade for a number 3 or 4 starter if you can. Get creative. Pull something out of nowhere. You know, in the 2018 trade season in July leading up to the deadline, nobody foresaw Nathan Eovaldi. I never brought his name up prior to that trade that month when we were talking Red Sox, but it happened. And it wasn't even the sexiest of signings. It was like, okay, he's a guy that will keep things stable. We didn't foresee he would be this hero come October, winning at least one big game against the Astros, and then that heroic extra innings game didn't go our way, but it was fine. That was, I think, our only loss that series to the Dodgers. But we're just not seeing that. And, you know, I just miss those days. I thought we were going to get that with Chaim Bloom. I really thought that would be a big part of the Bloom era when Bloom came in. I mean, I thought that was going to work out brilliantly, and it didn't. And I don't know. We'll see with Breslow. I mean, maybe Cooper Criswell comes out of nowhere. Maybe that ends up being one of those Tampa Bay type development things where by May he's pitching 6 innings consistently and keeping it at 4 runs or less and giving you a chance to win. I don't know. Maybe that happens, but it's hard to, I mean, prior to today, I still thought there was at least a 20% chance of Jordan Montgomery, assuming Giolito was still healthy prior to today. And even so, I'm thinking probably about 74, 75 wins. Now I think 70 is questionable if no moves get made. 70 is extremely questionable at this point, and that's where I'm at.
Michael, you mentioned the Carrabba's tweet of, you know, 65 games being pitched by like TBDs or opener or bullpen games. And, you know, I think part of that benefit is the unpredictability of that, right? Like, you don't know who's going to be coming out of the bullpen. The bullpen guys are good because you see them so infrequently and for short spurts, right? They don't have to have 3, 4, 5 innings worth of stuff. You can come in, get your 6 outs at most, and then, you know, give it to the next guy. And we saw that to an extent for a little bit of success last year, right? You had your Bernardinos and some of the other arms that would come out, give you a couple of quirky innings because there wasn't really a lot of tape on the guys. There wasn't a lot of scouting. There wasn't a lot written in the book. And the earlier you turn to that, the less effective that becomes. The more often you throw that out there, the less effective that becomes. And, you know, Bloom and I guess to an extent Breslow now have done a good job building a bullpen. And I guess we got to give Bloom the majority of the credit for that. And it was a strength of our team last year. Absolutely. But, you know, you mentioned it. We were going to them so often in April, we weren't getting past the fifth inning with the starters. You know, you mentioned the great statistic of how many innings our starting pitching has pitched. And, you know, I agree that it'd be great to see creativity out of this front office. But, you know, Terry, you mentioned the $38 million going to players that aren't going to pitch for this team. That hurts a lot if you're going up to the regular luxury tax, not this fake $200 million salary cap that you self-imposed upon your, you know, on your own team. Like, I don't really know what kind of creativity there can be. I mean, I don't know in recent memory, apart, I guess, from like the A's to where they are just punting on being a competitive team because of payroll, like these constraints are almost, I mean, like, what is Breslow supposed to do, right? Like, I don't even foresee a path to where like, okay, well, if we move this guy, like, you know, if we get on the NBA trade machine, all right, let's package this pick with this player and maybe we can get some value there and we can turn that into, you know, like a paperclip into $100 or whatever that flea market game is. Like, it's just not out there. And I think, you know, other GMs are acknowledging that, you know, the Red Sox are an unserious organization at this point, at least, you know, going into 2024. And it is very disappointing.
Another thing here is you talk about the bullpen, but there's a very good chance you're not getting to Martin and Jansen. They're just, they come in when there's a lead. So your mop up guys are going to flame out, you know, from being used so much. I mean, I'm just looking through some of the names last year. You know, Joe Jakes was one, Mauricio Yovera, I think we DFA'd him, Zach Weiss, I mean, Kyle Barraclough in the final month. Like, it was just a nonstop back and forth from Pawtucket. And remember Matt Dermody? And that was controversial because he had some offensive tweets. I forget the exact nature of them. But those are the guys you're going to have, the guys you've never heard of that are coming up because, you know, our back end of the bullpen guys are just gassed. And you're going to see a lot of DFAs because of that. And you're going to see a lot of guys getting picked up off of waivers, you know, from other teams DFAing them. I mean, that's what you see. That's the carousel right now. That is the Red Sox, and it's brutal. I mean, this has been a half a decade. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast, but what happened in 1918? Do you guys remember?
Are you talking about 19th, the World Series
and then Babe Ruth
selling Ruth for, yeah, exactly, to finance a play?
That's so exactly.
You're now saying Mookie Betts is the new Babe Ruth.
I'm just 2.0. Saying 2018 is looking really ominous now, you know, because that was the last year we truly identified as a big market team, and then you traded a generational talent. I mean, is it possible Mookie Betts could, now I was not in favor of extending him, but my expectation was we were going to continue to, you know, be the big market team that we were. But just from a talent perspective, not who knows what his final stats will look like. He's going to Cooperstown. I think we can all agree on that. But just from a raw talent perspective, how many players in Red Sox history have truly been more talented? You know, Ted Williams is an obvious one. You could throw Ruth in there, I guess. But I don't think you can put a top five together without having Mookie in there.
I mean, did Babe Ruth win gold gloves and steal bases?
No.
And like Mookie was a five-tool player, like a legit five-tool player. And he's only become, maybe his speed has, you know, lessened because they probably don't want him stealing as much, but now his power is even better. Like he's not a once in a generation, but for in terms of an organization developing a player like that, he's a once in a generation type player. You're not developing those guys every 3 or 4 years. That just doesn't happen. And they let him go, and it sure feels like a new curse is upon us.
It is. It does.
But, you know, I didn't feel this way so much, but it probably would have gotten to this point. But, you know, the Giolito not having now any value at the trade deadline, you know, the hope was if this team was out, you could trade him, maybe Pivetta, Martin, Jansen. Maybe you get some pitching back, and hopefully you can turn those pitchers into, you know, future rotation arms. But where does the pitching come from? Because this is a question now I have for not only 25, 26, and even 27. Where are the arms coming from? Because I don't see a lot of arms coming from the minor leagues. You could hit on one or two of those guys, but that's still a long shot. And, you know, you talked about a trade, Terry. I don't know if there's a guy out there, even a 3 or 4, where I'd be like, yep, I think a team would give the Red Sox that player and they wouldn't have to give up a really good player. I just don't know if those players are out there. Like, pitching is so coveted because it's so hard to develop your own pitching. And then when you operate in the free agent market, I mean, Zach Wheeler just got over $40 million a year. Like, that's what you have to pay for premium pitching. And there's zero sign. There's probably a negative sign of John Henry being willing to pay a pitcher in his 30s $40+ million, because that's the going rate for an ace. And it's like, so where does the pitching come from? And I mean, I go back to the trades. You have to be willing to trade. And the only way you trade for a good pitcher is by giving something up. And that would mean Meyer, Anthony, or probably Teal. And it's been stated that those guys are the future building blocks. But it's like, you can have the greatest offense. Like, Mookie Betts could be on the Red Sox right now, and I don't think it would change much of their win total, because we're not talking about the offense. This has everything to do with pitching, and I don't know where the pitching's coming from. So this isn't a 2024 problem. It's a 2025 and beyond problem. I don't know where it comes from. You were talking about, you haven't looked at the free agent market for 2025. There's really two names out there, most likely, that will be out there. Because like Gerrit Cole has an opt-out, but then the Yankees can pick up his 10th year. So like, he's going to be a Yankee. But there's really two names out there right now that I think are front of the rotation caliber pitchers. Corbin Burns and then Max Fried. Those are the two big ones. And then depending on how much you like Shane Bieber and you believe in him, he'd be available as well. But then you're looking at Robbie Ray coming back from an injury, Frankie Montas, Jack Flaherty, Kyle Hendricks. Like, these aren't aces out there. So you're looking at Max Fried, Corbin Burns, and then however you feel about Shane Bieber.
And not good.
Baltimore is going to spend money now with their ownership. And the biggest spender in the league, Cohen, didn't sign one starting pitcher this offseason. So they're going to need an entire new rotation pretty much next year. Who do you think they're going to try to go get? Probably one of those big names. So it's like when you go into that market, when you're trying to get an ace, so are some of the other big teams. Maybe the Dodgers aren't going in there because they're kind of set now. They had a massive offseason, but that doesn't take away from maybe the Yankees being aggressive or the Mets being aggressive or any other team that can be aggressive. And, you know, you just cannot rely on free agency to build your rotation. Like, that's why I think they should go get Montgomery now, because other teams haven't, they didn't want to invest in Jordan Montgomery. So the Red Sox should jump at the opportunity to be able to get him and not have to compete like crazy against other teams. Because next year, there is going to be a very, very high demand for those two or three guys that are front of the rotation caliber arms. And if you don't get them then, guess what you end up doing? Well, we're going to 2026, that's going to be the year. And you just keep pushing it down one more year, one more year. When do the Red Sox become competitors and get back to competing for AL East division titles? When does that happen? 2027, 2028? Like, what are we doing? This is the Boston Red Sox with, honestly, they do have unlimited resources. If we really want to put it out there, they do. They just limit themselves, but they have unlimited resources. And it's just so frustrating because it's just year after year. Well, 2021, 2022, 2023. Like, I don't see when it stops unless they actually develop their own pitching. And right now, we're 3 or 4 years away from actually developing probably another ace or a number two caliber pitcher. You have to draft them. And even then, you don't know. So I just don't know where the pitching's coming from moving beyond. This seems like we are going to be in this for a long time.
Remember in December, Micah, I told you, I said, I think Montgomery's going to be a late signing. I bet it doesn't happen till late January, early February. And you kind of rolled your eyes like, yeah, you're probably right. Well, it's May 6th, March 6th, excuse me. And he still hasn't signed.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I am shocked. I could see Snell holding out because he just seems like a guy that, you know, I'm going to wait out the market as long as possible. But Montgomery doesn't seem like a guy that would just go for the top dollar. He just strikes me as a guy who would kind of want to know where he's going to be. So I am a little surprised at Montgomery, but you did call it.
And here's the other crazy thing. When was there ever a time in baseball history with free agency where the reigning Cy Young couldn't land on a team, you know, relatively early? That's just insane to me. And I know Snell is kind of a special case. You know, his career has had these weird ups and downs, and even though he was a Cy Young last year, his walk rate was through the roof, and you know, so, but it's just, it's insane to me. But, you know, when you look at the development in the future, I mean, you got to come up with another Bayo type guy somewhere in there. It probably makes sense to get Bayo extended. It seemed like they weren't too far away a couple weeks ago, but there's been no further updates on that. But you develop another Bayo type guy, you probably need two free agents, and then, you know, you'll always have a Nick Pivetta type guy on your roster. Most teams do. And, you know, that's the conventional path to doing it. Whether or not they can execute it is another thing. But it's just tough. You know, the front office dynamic isn't great. The way the media goes after the team, like, they do kind of react. I mean, they did fire Chaim Bloom, and there was a huge crusade through the media, through social media. And I think that's part of what drove that. But the whole team's a mess in every aspect, on the field, in the front office, ownership, you know, not being able to control a narrative. it's just, what about this organization is good right now? Like, what can you say? Like, okay, this is a safety net. There is no safety net.
Cody, what is good about this organization right now? Enlighten us. What is good?
He'll be honestly the guy, right?
I felt like I was right even with you in terms of positivity, and everyone will say Terry's now making me negative, but that's really not the case because I'm just tired of last place finishes. That is why I'm negative. So, Cody, enlighten me. Why should I be positive in 23 days? Please tell me.
I mean, the Fenway Hall of Fame, whatever thing, I think is pretty good, right? Isn't that word on the street that that's a pretty cool experience? No. You know, we do have young talent, right? It's starting to come through. We're starting to see it. The guys are getting called up. So, you know, there is pieces to be excited about. But, you know, playing that game is so finicky, right? And I think it is the hardest to identify talent in baseball out of all the sports. I think, you know, the hit rate on other leagues is far higher. So it's just a risky game. And you guys, you know, I think nailed it right on the head, right? Free agency isn't the way to build a rotation, right? You know, I went through in the heart of the Bloom era where we were talking about like, oh, if we had signed Gausman, or if, oh, we had signed this player, or if we had gotten this pitcher, like this rotation would have been better. And I went through and I was like, all right, well, let's look at it this way. All the people that have had postseason success, who were the main contributors on their roster? Let's look at, you know, our own teams, who are the main contributors for the postseason rosters. And a lot of them were homegrown talent, apart from 2018, when we got a lot of contributions from, you know, the prices and the sales. But, you know, it's putting a lot of pressure on Andrew Bailey. You know, maybe that's something that we can get excited about, you know, that he's got a program that could develop some of these guys. You know, we did invest in the offseason coaching and getting, you know, more into the metrics, more into the analytics, and thank you. Yeah. And just, you know, creating those partnerships and investing in, I guess, the next level of thinking. But, you know, at a certain point in time, you got to roll the ball out there. You got to roll out the pucks, or, you know, whatever that expression is, and play ball, right? You can look at the numbers till the cows come home. And to be honest, I look at numbers all day, whether it be for work or for personal interests. But at a certain point in time, it's time to put up or shut up. And when it comes to that, there's just not a lot of excitement at the moment. And, you know, if we're going to invest this heavily in the future, then sign those guys. Don't wait. Don't deliberate. Don't, you know, make it too long and too difficult before you can sign these guys at good value, because then you're hamstringing yourself on both ends. You're not a free agent destination, but you're also not retaining your young talent, and now you're overpaying for guys that are maybe, you know, past their prime or mediocre. And so it's just kind of this self-imposed vicious cycle.
I don't really have much else to add. Micah does.
I do. So this is going off of the Zach Wheeler signing. So he signed for 3 and 126. That's his extension, correct?
Correct. I think
it was that.
42 a year.
I have to believe that Scott Boras is sitting there with Blake Snell saying, this is a two-time Cy Young Award winner who is like 4 or 5 years younger than Zach Wheeler. I have to imagine now, if he's taking a short-term deal, that's where he's pivoting towards and saying, well, I want 3 and 126 or 3 and 130, because two-time Cy Young Award winner, younger. Like, the deal that Wheeler got it's kind of a game changer, just because he didn't have to sign that. But boy, oh boy, it definitely sets the market for the future aces that are out there. You know, if Corbin Burns has a big year, I can only imagine what he's going to get, you know. So I was shocked to see that high of an AAV for Wheeler. He's a great pitcher. He's durable. I mean, he's been amazing signed by Dave Dombrowski since he's gotten to Philly. And he was a risky sign because he was not healthy with the Mets. But 3 and 126, that's a big, big number.
So he basically got the Scherzer and Verlander deal, is basically what he got. And he, Verlander and Scherzer were both upper 30s when they got there. He's 36, 37 years old. Wheeler is 33 right now, does turn 34 in May. So this will essentially be his age 34 season. So I don't think it's that bad. And he's had Tommy John much more recently than Lucas Giolito has. And his final year with the Mets, actually, he had two healthy years with the Mets. 2018, 3.31 ERA, 29 starts. Next year, not quite as good, 3.96 ERA, 31 starts. So the Mets kind of fixed him. Then he hit free agency. The Phillies snagged him. And then Dave Dombrowski, he inherited him and now gave him a nice extension. I think that's a relatively low risk move. And he is a bona fide ace. Is he a surefire Cy Young guy? No, probably not. But he's a bona fide ace. He's got postseason experience. And if you're gonna overpay on a 3-year deal, Zach Wheeler's a good guy to make that bet on. And the interesting thing here is the day before that got announced, the Phillies were connected to Blake Snell. So I don't know if Dave kind of used Blake Snell as a point of leverage there to try to get the Wheeler deal done. Happened the next day. So, but as far as Blake Snell, I was thinking 3 years, 105. I've been pretty resigned to the idea that he will take outside of New York, because they're the one team that's, offered him 5 or 6 years. So potentially he could get a bigger deal with them still. But I've been thinking 3 years, 105, that would be $35 million a year. So that'd be $7 million less than Wheeler. I think Wheeler's worth more, though. Like, I'm placing my money on Wheeler. Even 3 years older is the safer bet to me. But it's going to be a nine-figure deal for Snell either way.
Yeah, I mean, Snell has been a little bit more inconsistent, right? And, I think if you were to sign Snell, you probably wanted to sign that personal catcher that he was working with down the stretch in San Diego as well, right? Why try to change something that was working? I think Wheeler has that durability, both, in health and in results, right? And, has shown to have the big game stuff. Snell did it well in the postseason. They kind of over analytics his last postseason start, which, was talked about ad nauseum. But I don't think there's anybody in Red Sox Nation that wouldn't sign Snell for 3-105 at any point in time in this offseason. I think if you would have rolled that out at any point, we would have been ecstatic.
Honestly, I'll take Blake Snell in Boston right now. 3 years? Why not? Why not? It's probably not a great park for him. He probably doesn't have the personality to play here. A lot of people compare him to David Price, and I think that's unfair. I don't think he's that inflammatory, but I don't know. It won't happen either way, because you'd have to give up a pick to sign him. So Montgomery would be the ultimate default regardless. Yeah. Any more thoughts?
I was just going to say I'm sad.
Oh, I was going to spin it the other way. I mean, for a 2-hour stretch there, we were looking at Giolito with a partially torn UCL. Duran was finicking with his foot, the same foot that had surgery this offseason. And I was like, boy, this season, we were already low on the expectation, might be torpedoed before it started. But, to end it on a bit of positivity, reports are coming out that his foot's fine. His ankle's just a little bit tight, a little bit sore, but he'll be back in the lineup on Thursday. So, at the very least, we can hopefully knock on wood for that one at the moment.
I just want to see the next 23 days go so fast that nobody gets hurt and that you go in with the current roster the way it is, because 23 days, something bad can happen. I don't want anything to happen. Put Brian Bello in a bubble wrap, like whatever you have to do to keep these guys healthy for the remaining 23 days, because I can't take much more. Today was rough. I was driving home from work and then I saw the Durant news and I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, oh, so, I mean, I agree, Cody. That was, if there was any positive, it was that, you know, it doesn't sound serious, but 23 days is a long time. Bad things can happen. And I just don't like the mojo or the voodoo, whatever you want to call it, around this team right now. It's just not good.
I think, and this will be my final thought, it's a deep one too. I think, you know, if there's a God in heaven, I think he's just given the Red Sox all the bad karma right now, you know, at the expense of Lucas Giolito's UCL. It's just bad karma for all the lies, the shadiness with, you know, not announcing the tighter constraints until after the season ticket deadline. And you know, it's what it is. Every Red Sox great right now that's in heaven is, you know, laughing at John Henry. That's my deep final thought. And we will wrap on that. Hopefully I'm wrong about everything I said tonight and something insane happens in the next few days because the Red Sox had an epiphany and are suddenly desperate. But we'll see. Until then, everyone have a great rest of your week. Take care.